chapter 22, verses 17 through 21 is what I'll be reading today. And this is Paul's story, a man that we follow a lot in the New Testament. And this is his reflecting about his call and conversion with God. So listen now and receive these words. He says, "When I returned to Jerusalem and was praying in the temple, I had a visionary experience. I saw the Lord speaking to me. 'Hurry,' he said. 'Leave Jerusalem at once, because they won't accept your testimony about me.' I responded, 'Lord, these people know I used to go from synagogue to the next, beating those who believe in you and throwing them into prison. When Stephen was your witness being killed, I stood there giving my approval, even watching the clothes that belonged to those who were killing him. Then the Lord said to me, 'Go, I will send you far away to the Gentiles.'" This is a reading of Holy Scripture for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. An appropriate response. So there's a popular and what I would call unique series on television right now. Maybe some of you have heard of it, called This Is Us. A tagline for the show is this: everyone has a family, and every family has a story. And this is not only true on TV, but it's also true in real life. It's true about the church, and it's true about us. This is us. The show switches back and forth between different time periods in the life of the Pearson family, showing how what people experience in life impacts who they are. It demonstrates the truth that the smallest things in life can sometimes serve as turning points for us. For the Pearson family, you see the overlap and the impact of how our decisions and our choices affect others. And you also witness the power of love and forgiveness to heal wounds. They show us how we can either confront and embrace life, or we can run from it. The connection that we share with others of both our biological and our chosen families has the ability to not only change us, but to do a lot of good in the world as well. So over the next 5 weeks, we are going to be looking at what it means to be us as individuals, as the church, as citizens of the world. So this Sunday, Eric and I are excited to share about This Is Us as your co-senior pastors.
And we've gotten that question a lot. People want to get to know us. And this is how Emily and I got to know each other, sitting at a table like this, on stools like this, with a cup or a glass of whatever. And one of the things that we learned about each other and our stories is that we both sort of resonate with the story of the Apostle Paul. Because we have a story. Each of us has a story. We're all part of God's story. So in that scripture that Emily just read, Paul is telling the story of his conversion and his calling from God as an evangelist. And he's telling his story to an angry mob of Jerusalem Christians who have just drug him out of the temple because they do not approve of his teachings or his methods, particularly as it relates to some of their sacred customs and deeply held beliefs. And so in that moment, Paul asks permission to tell his story. And he tells them about how he had been known for persecuting followers of Jesus, how he was an accomplice to the stoning of Stephen, the first Christian martyr. And then when he was on his way to do some more persecuting, God blinded him, stopped him in his tracks on the road to Damascus. And then after some time, with the help of a man named Ananias, Paul was eventually able to see clearly again and able to see spiritually for the first time. And then he said, not long after that, one day while he was in the temple, God spoke to him again in a moment of clarity. God told him two things. The first thing was for Paul to get the heck out of Jerusalem, because the people there would not accept his testimony about God. And Paul conceded he didn't have the best reputation among the Christians there because of his track record. I guess when you've been systematically hating on a people group, it can be tough for them to accept that you've had a change of heart and warmly welcome you in with open arms. But Paul also discovered that the Jewish Christians rejected not only his change of heart, but also his understanding of the faith. See, Paul's relationship with the mother church in Jerusalem was strained at best. The book of Acts and several of Paul's New Testament letters contain evidence of the rift that existed between Paul, this rebel missionary to the Gentiles, and Peter and James, the disciples of Jesus who led the home church in Jerusalem. And yet, in spite of their differences over important things like circumcision and the eating of unclean meat that had been sacrificed to idols, they still managed to coexist together as followers of Jesus. Paul even collected offerings from the congregations in Corinth and Macedonia and sent them back to the home church in Jerusalem when they were in need. And the second thing that God told Paul was to go to the Gentiles. And it's this part of Paul's story that especially resonates for us. God sending him out from the church to share the gospel with new people, breaking down barriers, radically and recklessly inviting everyone to know the love of God. And we also believe that that's central to Methodism as an expression of Christianity.
John Wesley himself, the founder of our denomination, became that only because he was pretty upset himself with some of the barriers that he saw in his own church, the Anglican Church in England. He was a traditionalist in many ways, but he was bothered by the lack of emphasis on personal connection with God, which he believed would propel us to connect with and to serve others. He felt like the church on one occasion or the other had failed to focus on spiritual disciplines like prayer, fasting, reading the Bible, or even really important to John Wesley was his emphasis on intimate small groups, this sharing intimately with others. And now we call that the Wesleyan means of grace, because we understand that it's often through those practices that we do encounter God's grace for our lives, and that it begins to inform us and then motivate us. And he believed that this is truly happens when we become vulnerable with one another, when we open up and share, and that this causes us then to want to live and behave and to act differently with others. Now, John Wesley himself was a faithful person. He was born and raised in the church. His parents were greatly influential in his life, especially his mother, Susanna. Different from Paul, he was born and raised in the church, but he still encountered this question of what does this mean for my life? In many ways, constantly being faced with some disappointments and the church's lack of zeal. He was always seeking and asking questions, even doubting at times. In some ways, it was like he was almost chasing after this assurance of God's presence. Yet, even in the midst of his struggles and his questions, he became a traveling salesman for God, moving around from town to town on horseback, teaching and preaching his understanding of God's desire for personal relationship with us. Through all of it, this was a truth that he knew was worth preaching, even when he had questions and doubts. He had this perspective of the world as my parish that guided his ministry. He believed that everywhere you go is an opportunity to experience God through others. He believed that every encounter was an opportunity to learn something new. This phrase, "the world is my parish," has been something that has guided me in my life and ministry. I'm what some might call a cradle Methodist. I've been attending church since I was in my mother's womb. My dad and both of my grandfathers are United Methodist pastors. The church has always been home for me. And I feel very fortunate that I had parents who recognize that sometimes that there are pressures that come with being the pastor's kid, the PK. We actually tend to get kind of a bad rap sometimes. But they help to balance and manage the expectations and assumption placed on me, or even that I placed on myself. You know, I really do believe that we all have choices that we make as we grow up. Sometimes we regret a few more of those than others. But they all shape us and mold us. As John Wesley experienced, I have also experienced that sometimes it's the smallest, unexpected, unplanned, unimagined moments in our lives when we encounter God's grace, compassion, and love. One of these moments that I'll share today was when I was in the fifth grade. My mom was sick for the second time with breast cancer, and my family had been again surrounded by our church community, who constantly were bringing us meals, even doing our laundry, and helping to cart my brother and I back and forth to activities we needed to get to. And I remember one night in particular, in the midst of what was going on, that we were home after my dad and I had just been to the grocery store to get some essentials, and the house phone rang. Now, that's the phone that goes on the wall and has the cord on it, and you have to answer it. And in this exchange, I could hear my dad listening, and then he received some information and hung up the phone. And he looked at me and he said, "Emily, will you help me pack up some of these groceries we just got?" That was a mom that was on the other end of the phone who is in desperate need of getting some essential food for her children. "Will you help me do that?" So my brother and I collected the milk that we had just gotten and some other items from our pantry. And I looked at my dad and I said, "Can I go with you?" And he said, "Sure, come on." So we left and we went to this house and walked in the door and delivered these groceries to a mom and her kids who were just in some need. And for me, in that moment, I realized in the midst of our family's difficulty and what we were going through, that it was different from what this mother was experiencing. But it was this moment that made me realize the power that can happen in this circle of care and compassion that is at work, if we will but be aware of God's movement in it. There have been so many moments in my life when I've been aware of this sense of God calling me and working in my life to embody compassion for people. Yes, our friends and our neighbors, but also for strangers and people who are just in a place of need in their life. I knew from an early moment in my life that God had called me, and this sense of call was because of the witness of the church family that I'd experienced and grown up in. I wanted to be a part of what God was doing through the church. Now, this call, it ebbed and flowed throughout the years. But because I encountered this deepest sense of community and connection with God and the church, I wanted to be a part of that. Paul's story of conversion is powerful. It's overwhelming, in fact. And while mine is different, what I see in Paul's conversion is that at first there didn't seem to be a bone of compassion in his body. But maybe that is what most fully changed after he experienced God. And I am so very thankful that in my life I have seen so many signs of God's compassion at work in the world. And I feel excited about the ways in which God's people are called to live that out in our lives. All throughout my life, I've been so utterly aware of the importance of this compassion for others, to value the fullness of all that God has created, and maybe even to start with the assumption of beauty and connection over divisions. And in this way in which I have experienced this time and time again has been when I've been in community with others. That's how I've experienced it. Community is incredibly important to me. I've experienced this beauty and of bearing one another's burdens and working together as a team. And the call is still happening. It's still unfolding. I'm still living into it, discovering new ways God is calling me to be faithful and to respond. And now here I sit beside Eric as a partner in ministry with you, Chambly First. And I feel excited about the ways that God will continue to call us as a community to show compassion to others.
And it hasn't been lost on us, the places where our stories are similar and the places where they're different. For instance, I'm not a cradle Methodist.
That's the right
Not
word.
A cradle Methodist. I was born in the Southern Baptist Church. Born and raised there. Every time the doors were open, we were there. And then after my parents divorced, my father remarried and he married a Methodist. And when I moved in with them, I started going to the Methodist Church. And I'm Methodist today. And I didn't start going with them to a Methodist church back when I was in high school because I just felt so drawn to the theology or the polity. I mean, it was more of I was a minor and they were, you know, my guardians, so I went with them to church. But the longer that I've been in the Methodist church, I have found that what we think, what we teach, what we believe really resonates in me with who God created and called me to be. And I couldn't say anything about my own story or my faith without naming how formative the relationship with my wife and children has been. Jessica and I have been married for 20 years. We've got three kids, ages 19, 16, and 9. And I don't think a day goes by that God isn't shaping my faith in some way through my wife and my children. But after I had finished college and started work for a public accounting firm, my wife and I got involved in our little home Methodist church, a country Methodist church up near Gainesville, Georgia. And we realized, as a young married couple who was just starting a family, how hard that is. We had more questions than we had answers, and we struggled. It was difficult. But I tell you, that little country Methodist church full of good people surrounded us, supported us, loved on us, helped us through our challenges, our mistakes. And they were for us an embodiment of the love of God. And it's the same thing that I experienced when I went there as a teenager, when I moved in with my dad and stepmom and had to change high schools and move to a whole new community. That's hard to do as a teenager. But that church loved me, supported me, welcomed me. And that left an impression on me, my experience with our home church, so much so that it's become a very deep part of my calling to make sure that the church is welcoming, open, and inviting for all people, for anyone, anywhere, that everyone would know that they have a place in the community of faith and the family of God. And then as I've followed my calling to pastoral ministry and have served that out now in a few different settings, one as a youth pastor who seemed to always have an eye on the students who weren't in the church just as much, if not more, than the ones who were, to a church planter to start a new community of faith where there wasn't one, to a pastor charged with starting a new worshiping environment within an existing church, a church within a church whose sole purpose was to connect with new people. All those experiences, I think, maybe tapped into something else in me, sort of that entrepreneurial spirit or that innovative, creative, hey, let's try this kind of thing, and gave me opportunities to live out that calling. And so that all is what has brought me here to Chambly to be a co-pastor with Emily, and we're trying something new now this way, and we know that people have questions about it. We do too. And we're discovering those answers as we go along. And we're also excited to invite you into that process and into that journey and to share a little bit more about it. We've set up already some times to do that. One of the things that we're going to do is we're going to have an onboarding for the leaders of the church with us, facilitated by a professional to help us get up to speed with each other about what this co-senior pastoring looks like. We're also going to take some of the Wednesday night supper opportunities to share with anybody who wants to come more about us and our callings and how we understand being co-pastors and field questions from you. And we're going to be making it around to all the Sunday school classes over the next couple of months. We're scheduling that even as we speak. And so we'll spend time with you in your Sunday school classes, again, sharing about us and fielding questions from you.
From the very moment that we learned about this possibility of co-pastoring, we did have some of those questions. What would this mean? What would this look like? And we knew that some of the questions that would come to us is, who's really in charge here? And who do I go to when something happens in my life? And we want to be sure to be clear and open about how we are going to handle that as your co-senior pastors. I remember early on, Eric and I had a phone conversation, much with Eric's wife, Jessica, on the phone, because from the very beginning of this, we knew that this was going to invite a team spirit. It was going to invite us to be collaborative. It asked us to be transparent with one another. We talked and discussed, and even in the midst of these questions and in the midst of that conversation that we had, it became so clear and evident to both Eric and myself that we saw this as an opportunity of a way for us to continue answering the call of God on our lives. And the way that we see God continuing to call God's church, for each of us to be open to learning and growing and serving God in new ways.
And there are a few things that we've learned already about this co-pastoring. And one of them is deeply theological. And what I mean by that is we understand God to be collaborative in God's very nature. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Even in the Trinity, the triune nature of God, we see collaboration. And so it makes sense then that the church, God's kingdom at work in the world, would be collaborative in nature, even all the way to the very top. So that it makes sense for a church to have more than one senior pastor, to have co-pastors who can collaborate and co-labor and work together in that role of leadership. We've also discovered that it makes sense to have different gifts and different skills and abilities and talents serving alongside one another in this leadership role, because Emily has gifts and talents and wisdom and perspective that I don't have, and I've got gifts or something.
Yeah, okay. Keep going.
Yeah, we're going to find them. We're going to find them. They're there.
Seek and you shall find.
Yes, and so it makes sense to capitalize on that, on the variety and the differences of the gifts, even in the leadership of the church. And we'll also lift up for you that we believe this is something that we can model for you, for our congregation and for our community. To know that if God and God's very nature is collaborative, and that we are called to co-labor and to share in this work together, then it's not about a person being in charge or having authority or having power, but it's about us sharing that together. It's about us sharing the responsibility and the leadership. And that together, when we do that, we're stronger. And we're more like who God created us to be. And we believe that can be a witness to the world, to the people around us. Because as we can tell, the people that we're talking to and their work environments, in your places of business, more and more organizations, companies are moving to team-led models, to co-leadership structures, instead of everything being as hierarchical as maybe it once was. But now we're learning to leverage the wisdom of the collective and working together.
And we believe this co-pastor model is not possible without the people to live it out with, without the people to do ministry with. And the city of Chambly, it is an exciting place. It is full of depth and history, and also full of blooming possibilities. New restaurants and businesses. There's some really good ice cream and donut shops in this town. And not to mention the pizza. And for this faith community of Chambly First, we are full of depth and history. And we are also blooming with possibility. We believe that each one of you is a gift to this community. If you are here today, you are a blessing and a gift. We are thankful for your physical presence, but all the gifts and skills and talents and questions and joy that you bring blesses us and this ministry. You're a part of this community, and we are excited and thankful that in all of it, we each have a story and we become a part of God's story as we work and act together. Each of you have a calling, and now we are called to listen to God together.
So the Apostle Paul had a story, and he shared it. John Wesley had a story, and he shared it. Emily has a story. I have a story. You have a story. Each one of you has a story about what God has been doing in your life, what God is doing in your life, and what God will do in your life and in our lives together. We are all part of God's story. So this is us.
As we close out our time of worship today, we want to give you the opportunity to reflect on your story. As we sing this last hymn, if you feel inclined, you're welcome to come forward and spend a moment kneeling at the altar. If you just want to stay right where you are and be aware for a moment of God's presence that's been in your life, maybe the people that have made a moment of transition for you in your life. But let us stand now and sing joyfully together our closing hymn.